right, folks, we've been cleared for takeoff. Give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now and give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now, get ready to go. She ain't moving slow, she's taking control. Pushing the pedal through the floor. I'm begging for more, you better hold on tight.
And welcome to Hell with Flight Deck, the show dedicated to Montreal Alouettes football. I'm Tim Capper, along with Cliffy D. You know, one thing, Cliff, after going to the preseason game this past week, I think it may have been a very good sign of either A, the team is going to do well, or there was a giant box of Lucky Charms where everybody could go and get them, was that rainbow that showed up before the game started.
It was beautiful, Tim. I mean, if you're looking for like a symbol of things to come, if you're looking for some sort of sign that things are going to be fantastic, that life is going to be so much better, what better way to signify that than with a rainbow? Especially when you think about it, we're in the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, Tim. That's nice. Where we are. This past Friday, we were in the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow because we got to see Alouettes football live.
The pot of gold called Percival Molson Stadium. Is that what you're getting at? We were in that pot of gold.
if we're going to be referencing pop culture things, I'll just say there's no place like home when it comes to Percival Molson Stadium.
Anybody didn't see it? I think the Alouettes may have posted something about it. A picture from, if you're sitting on the north side, I think it was, you know, the side that's overlooking the city. And it was an unexpected rain shower that we ended up having, because I remember I hadn't seen you yet, but I was talking to my seatmate, and we're like, where is this weather coming from? We were not supposed to be getting this at all. And then I see the pictures afterwards of the rainbow, and I said, oh, it could be a sign of good things, as I said, or we're going to be eating Lucky Charms for breakfast. And I got what we call it, Lucky Charms. Speaking of, I guess, a draw of the luck or the luck of the Irish, we have to at least mention this. And we know we're not going to talk much about CFL news specifically unless it's really big stuff. But what about that announcement that came from the CFL to announce that a multitude of games, fantasy games for real cash money, is going to be available through DraftKings. You know, the CFL and DraftKings entered into a partnership and is going to be offering something that I cannot remember being offered in any of the football leagues that I watch in ever.
Well, except for the National Football League, because Lord knows if you ever watched NFL Network, you couldn't go 30 seconds without getting one of these ads from these daily fantasy sports places like DraftKings or FanDuel or what have you. But to tell you the truth, this is huge. This is very exciting stuff, not just for Canadian football fans, but the budding American CFL market as well, because this is a partnership that goes hand in hand with the people that love to gamble. And I don't care what they say, it is gambling.
Yeah.
Embrace it. Love it. You know what? People who doesn't play fantasy football, who doesn't bet on these things? Like, one way or another, football and gambling just go hand in hand. And good on the CFL for not necessarily encouraging gambling per se, but at least embracing the fact that, you know what, people really give a rat's ass about fantasy. Let's give them something to be excited about. And hey, if you can make a few bucks in the process, why not?
Well, it's also showing that they have faith in their in the stats that they're able to produce, and be able to get it in for, and you know that they're going to be, you know, correct, get them two of them in a timely fashion, and to be able to, because I saw some of these games, man. I'd love, you know, so I think that one of the top games total prize was $30K. The one that the free one that is being offered to everybody, because I know if you don't know DraftKings, you can, you know, pay an X amount to join this particular daily league, or weekly or whatever it you know tends to be, and come away with money. You know, I'll walk away with $1,000 if I could do it. So it's interesting. It really is an interesting dynamic that's been basically added to the CFL now. Second year of a new commissioner. No, is it first year of a new commissioner? Second year new commissioner, have this type of thing. You know, go through the, is this June yet to what we're made of to now this? This is huge.
Absolutely. And also, too, like, this plays perfectly with the CFL's partnership with ESPN3 and, well, the ESPN network in general as far as broadcasting games, because you've got a lot of people watching down the states and not just friends and family of the players of the league, but now you're going to get people that are going to be all of a sudden interested because, let's face it, like I said, a lot of people really like daily fantasy sports. And now that if they're looking for that fix, they're looking for something that's going to tide them over until NFL season starts. Well, hey, let me check out the Canadian Football League. Maybe let's see if I can figure this out too, as far as do I bet on so-and-so? Which teams do I want to watching? Like, you're only going to get to see, unless you actually go ahead and watch every single game, find some way to watch that down in the States, you're going to have to sort of rely on a little bit of luck and have a little bit of skill when it comes to that. And to me, I just see positives as far as viewership growing and interest in the league itself, not just amongst American fans, but also younger fans as well. And this is what you're trying to attract here with this sort of, partnership, mm-hmm. is younger fans, because you want people to be interested. You want people dialed in to the Canadian Football League. And what better way to do that than the offer of showing just how good you are at the stats, how good you are at picking the fantasy lineups. And like I said, the prospect of making a few bucks on the side, that's a win-win every day.
Exactly. And I will admit, I joined the league's pick 'em like I did last year. There are many quirks and stuff like that to being able to do, and luck. It really is luck and being able to choose these games and the winners, et cetera. So it's, good on them. It'll be interesting to see if this is just, and I don't remember what the PR said, if it was more than a year partnership. I would imagine so. Hey, if anybody's joined, let us know. Let us know how you did. Speaking of stats, by the way, we're debuting a new segment this week. It is Just the Stats with CFL head statistician Steve Daniel. And we'll be playing that for you. We'll be having that for you a little bit later. But Cliff, let's talk about the last game of the preseason for the Alouettes, which happened to be the home preseason opener for the Alouettes. It was nice to be back in the stadium. I will admit it was a gorgeous day, but it was more than just the weather that we were wanting to see while we were there.
Absolutely. I mean, this is the dress rehearsal. This is basically your snapshot, if you will, of what to expect for the 2016 season from the Montreal Alouettes. And I kind of delved on this a little bit, is that we saw a lot of the starters for the first half of this preseason game. And I get the importance of it. I understand why you want to try to establish that rhythm and everything like that. But to me, once again, it's got to be about player evaluation. And I just think that we saw a little too much of the starters. And there's just too much risk for injury, too much risk for something to go wrong. And truthfully, you aren't going to see anything anyways. So, I mean, it just really felt more like going through the motions as opposed to giving a chance of someone to stand out and really make some plays happen.
Yeah, like the last preseason game, I'm going to admit that I think Kevin Glenn, once again, played way too long. Way too long. Longer than how I just said that. It's not like a Billy Parker who did play, I think, at least three quarters, because a lot of the defensive starters did not play in the first preseason game. But I just don't understand what the point was for Glenn to play as long as he did, and to basically, it just seems like a broken record of over the past couple of years, no matter which head coach it is. And I understand it's preseason, but still, to just go with the guy that you know is going to be the starter, but yet you also, what about the other guys? You know, what about Cato? What about Bridge? You know, what about Adams? I mean, hello, I understand the other guys were most likely going to be heading back to the CIS to finish out their careers. But what really was the point in having Glenn play for as long as he did? I mean, God forbid if we went through the same thing again where he gets hurt in the preseason and we're back at square one, which is where we were last year, game one.
And again, when you take a look, especially when you go back to that very first game of the 2015 season, having two starting quarterbacks knocked out in that first game, yeah, it makes total sense of why you'd want to have as many quarterbacks as possible in your arsenal. But by that same token, you've got Kevin Glenn. You know he's going to be your starter. You basically said it last season that he was effectively going to be the starter for this football team. So why are you trotting him out there in what's essentially a nothing game, running the risk of getting knocked out by some no-name on the other team who's just trying to make a mark for himself, just trying to get a job in this league? Why risk it?
I mean, yeah, it's hopefully going forward. We'll be talking about the cuts and the final rosters and whatnot in a couple of minutes. But let's get to some positives here. Of anything that stood out to you the most, and I'm sure if anybody who was there who watched the game, I got something in my head already. What was the one thing that really stood out to you? If it was one particular play, one particular series, whatever it may be.
Well, I got to say, I'm really impressed with Rakeem Cato. Like, he's won me back over. I feel extremely confident in giving him the reins one day of this football team based on what we saw in preseason. It was a very sluggish start for him at camp, and Lord knows he had a few trials and tribulations to go through just to get to camp. But when he got here, he said all the right things. He didn't make any waves. He didn't try to draw any attention to himself. All he did was throw himself into his playbook and perform when his number was called. And perform he did. He had an incredible run just escaping out of the pocket I believe it was his first or second series, and set up essentially a touchdown run, if you will, with Taj Boyd plunging in at the one-yard line. But all of that came as a result of Rakeem Cato's hard work and just his ability to not be swallowed up by the moment. And I really think this calendar year has really been a learning experience for him and might have humbled him a little bit, but I think now he kind of realizes that, okay, this is my opportunity. I could really do something special here in Montreal. And I've got great mentors in both Anthony Calvillo and Kevin Glenn to sit and learn from. And as far as Cato's concerned, I'm really impressed with what I've seen with him. And if God forbid Kevin Glenn goes down to injury, I would not panic in the least knowing that Rakeem Cato would get his number called at that instant. So I'm pretty impressed with what Cato's brought to the table so far in training camp and in the preseason. And I'm definitely looking forward to seeing what he can do going forward this season.
For me, it was actually and it made all the highlights. Talking about the Daron Carter touchdown. Wow. That's all I can say. There's more, you know, if there are many other adjectives that I could use to describe that touchdown. But wow. Yeah. It just shows that, you know, sure, he was a year away on the practice roster for the Indianapolis Colts. The dude's back, man. You know, even though SJ went down early, what seemed to be a little bit of a knee contusion of some sort. So we knew his day was going to be done no matter what. But it just seems that he has not missed a beat whatsoever. And it could be very, very interesting down the line to see how
absolutely
well he works in the scheme of things with the offense.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you're an Alouettes fan, how can you not be excited at the prospect of SJ Green and Daron Carter lining up side by side in this receiving core? I mean, if the left one don't get you, the right one will. Mm-hmm. That's how you got to look at it with these two. Oh, and by the way, there's still Nick Lewis, Kenny Stafford, BJ Cunningham. I mean, these are good, strong receivers that are just – they're going to light this league up. Like, everybody's sleeping on the Alouettes this year. I can't tell you how many times I've seen these predictions, and everybody's got the Alouettes finishing dead last. And quite frankly, I couldn't be happier. I'm thrilled beyond belief that people are thinking that this team's going to crash and burn for any number of reasons, because I know the talent that we have on this field, and truly – I think the only team that can really beat the Montreal Alouettes is the Montreal Alouettes.
Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about that more, about what we think their predictions are going to be and how where they're going to stand within the scheme of things in the CFL East. Any bad things that you took away from this game? I mean, for me, I think it was a slow start. I mean, it was 3-1 Toronto after one. Boris Beta missing some vehicles, which I didn't expect him to miss, but I don't think it's really not too much of a concern. But what did you see that really that didn't sit well with you?
Like I said, definitely a sluggish start for sure. I mean, that's, again, when you got the starters out there, like you kind of expect, you don't expect them to run the table right away, and you don't want to see everything right from the hop. But at the same time, it just felt like, okay, well, if you're not really going to do anything, why don't you put someone in who's going to do something? At least let me see something here. I mean, just, it really felt like you were just keeping your cards to the vest, which, again, makes total sense because you don't want to reveal everything, especially not in the first preseason game or second preseason game. But at the same time, do something. Do some, get a little interest going. Aside from that, I mean, a lot of the starters, I felt for the most part, played pretty well, especially the defensive starters. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of negative there. I'd say, really, truly, it's just a matter of not being able to close. But, I mean, does that come back to, is it the rookies that are just not getting the time to really gel and shine like they should? Or is it the coaching staff maybe just sort of content with what they've put out so far and they're just not going to reveal anything? It's hard to say, really. So, I mean, I can't really say anything negative in that regards, but there's, like I said, there's definitely a lot to like, and there's definitely a lot of things that will need to be worked on. And, well, again, preseason's over now, so, I mean, there's no more excuses. The team we have is the team we have, and now it's time to see just how important, just how much they're going to gel and how much they're really going to show once that first game starts this Friday.
Now, after the game, following day, I think it was Saturday and Sunday, the Alouettes made notice of the players that were not going to be making the roster and the ones that were going to be making the practice roster. Quickly, I mean, from the players that were released, Taj Boyd, quarterback, Mikhail Davidson, wide receiver, Dominic Ellis. Let's see, some were saying Nick Temple. You know, as I said, the two quarterbacks, CIS quarterbacks, were released. Then Mitchell White on Monday. Now there are a few names and that stood out, and I'm sure they stood out to both you and me. But when you saw these cuts alone, was it one of those, especially some of these names, was it a jaw drop moment?
No question. When Dominic Ellis' name was dropped, like, and how we find out is through Twitter. Like, he just basically said, "Well, see you, Montreal." Like, what do you mean, "See you, Montreal"? What you and I? You got to be kidding me, Dominic Ellis. Like, one of the more highly sought after free agents this past offseason, one of the strongest, smartest, most cerebral players in the league, and the Alouettes are just going to let him walk? Are you kidding me? I couldn't believe it. And then, if that wasn't enough, the next day, also on Twitter, Mitchell White. "Man, I'm going to miss Montreal." Like, what? Miss it for what? Oh, you got to be. At this point, you're like, who's going to play boundary corner for the Alouettes this year? Yeah. Are you kidding me? That whole section of the field is not going to be occupied by rookies. And apparently Jim Popp had said that he was extremely impressed with the play of the rookies, and that made the decision a lot easier to let guys like Ellis and White go. And I'm not typically one to doubt the architect of this franchise, as I've said, but I mean, letting both those names go is I'm still trying to wrap my head around it for the most part. Like, I want to believe that we're going to be okay and this team's going to thrive like nothing else. But, man, like, those are two names that you just don't let those guys walk. I mean, if you wanted to trade them and get something out of it, okay, fine. But just to basically show them the door, I couldn't believe it. I mean, they played very well throughout training camp. They were very strong. And like I said, these are two young players that are going to be a force no matter what, no matter where they end up.
Well, it just goes to show with Dominic Ellis, literally less than 24 hours, he's signed by another CFL franchise.
Yeah, just like Brandon Whitaker last year. He was cut the last day of training camp, and within hours even, He was a member of the Toronto Argonauts, and same thing's happened again this year with Ellis. The ink on his release papers probably didn't even finish drawing, and boom, now he's a member of the Hamilton Tiger Cats.
Yeah. I don't know. And there were rumors, there were talks that we let these two guys go, you know, specifically Ellis and White, after they get a signing bonus, which I think rubs salt in the wounds even more so. That considering that it's, you know, a lot of people have said, and it seems to be known that the Alouettes are very, very close, if not over, before the final rosters were set, that they were close to going over this year's the new salary cap. So they're on the hook for approximately, I guess, $35,000 in bonuses, which is almost two-thirds of the way to a rookie contract, and they got to eat it.
Yeah, it's like I said, to me, it just it's a lot to wrap your head around for sure. Mm-hmm. And now we're gonna have to see, like, guys like Ethan Davis and Greg Henderson. I hope they're ready. That's all I gotta say, because they're gonna get tested right away. Like, you look at the first couple of games, we're playing Winnipeg, we're playing in Hamilton, or we're playing Ottawa. Again, these are teams that have veteran savvy quarterbacks, and they're going to test these rookies. I can tell you that right now.
Yep, it's true. And some of the things that really didn't surprise me, and one of the things I was looking for specifically, and I think I mentioned it to you at the game, was that let's watch and see who's going to be on the practice roster. And my thought to you was, I do not see the Alouettes putting one of our quarterbacks onto the practice roster, because as we've seen so far in the CFL, players have been placed on the practice rosters, and teams have already snatched up some people.
Absolutely. So take a look at BC, for example. They had offered they didn't even get a chance to put them on the roster spot. They essentially told them, we'd like to offer you the spot on the practice roster. And they basically said, no, that's good. We're going to Saskatchewan instead. In fact, the Lions, one of their high draft picks, Dylan Guy, is now a member of the Rough Riders. I mean, that's a wasted draft pick right there. Yeah, I can only imagine what Wally Bona must be thinking with that.
Now, as I mentioned to you, just because of where we are in our quarterback situation and the amount of money that has been basically put into Vernon Adams Jr., I said to you, quite sure of myself, that we are going to have four quarterbacks on the active roster. And sure enough, when the rosters came out on Saturday, we had four quarterbacks on the active roster. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't even include Jonathan Crompton, who is on the sixth game.
Right.
So this, you know, usually, you know, I just don't know what the team is going to do. Is this a thing to save a quarterback? I'm very sure it is. Why not place a quarterback on the sixth game? You only have to pay half, if I remember correctly, it's only half of the salary goes towards the cap at that point. When are some of these quarterbacks going to get reps? If it's, as we've seen, as I mentioned before, through Montreal Alouettes quarterback history, it's usually been starter, 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 no matter what the score is. You know, we never really had a good backup since AD Mack. Since AC was our quarterback, was the backup to Tracy Ham.
Mm-hmm.
And usually we will pay the price if a quarterback goes down. I mean, does it surprise you at all that the Alouettes kept all four quarterbacks on the active roster?
Not at all. Not at all. And again, it came to the point where it's like, you can't lose any of these guys. I mean, I really thought that perhaps the Alouettes maybe they didn't have the faith that Rakeem Cato would play the way he did. So at this point, you can't get rid of him. Brandon Bridge, you've got a Canadian quarterback. That's a success story right there. Yeah, you don't want to be the team that cuts this guy loose either. And like you said, the team's invested quite a bit in Vernon Adams Jr., and they got to get something for their investment right now. So
They gave up that first-round draft pick. So,
yep, which, again, we don't know where that's going to end up. God only knows the talent that's going to be available for Canadian teams to draft from next year. So, I mean, it's a calculated risk. There's no question about that. So, but again, at the end of the day, you've got four quarterbacks, and you can only play one of them at a time. So it's going to be a real challenge. Yep. Let's put it that way. Yep.
Third down gambles don't mean squat when you're a backup quarterback, because even though you are either the second or third stringer, now we got four. So I just do not know. I understand what they're doing, but I just do not understand what Coach Pop is doing when it comes to this, when having these four quarterbacks on the roster. They're not going to get hot. You know, they're not going to get their reps. They're not going to get the reps. You can have only so many reps at practice. Maybe things we'll see. You know, we haven't played a game yet. We have to be, got to be open minded.
We do. And again, if it all turns out well and everybody stays healthy and somehow they find a way to give everybody a good number of reps, then maybe this is all for nothing. I mean, we're just speculating right here anyway. So, I mean, you're absolutely right. Anything could possibly happen. And God forbid, let's just hope there's no injuries. Let's hope there's nothing catastrophic that could happen where people are just thrown into the mix. But at least now, if something does happen, then we've got we do have some really talented quarterbacks on this team. We've got some guys that, if given the chance, could really make some stuff happen.
Yeah, it'll be, I said.
The quarterbacks on this team, there's definitely some positives. There's some negatives, but there's definitely some positives to really expand upon. And I'm looking forward to it. I have complete faith in Kevin Glenn as the starting quarterback. I've got faith in Rakeem Cato backing him up. And then if Bridge and Adams can get some reps in there somehow, some way, I'm all for that as well.
Overall, looking at the final roster, what's your view of it? Because we had a big surprise too. We're talking about how weird the rosters can be. We find out today one of our players, Mikael Davis, who got cut. Davidson got cut, is back on the team as of today. Oh, I guess only in the CFL.
Only in the CFL, but I'm extremely happy about that because I'm definitely high on Mikael Davidson. Like, unfortunately, his preseason games, he was a little underwhelming. He had the yips, as they say, in that first game against Winnipeg. Muffed a couple of punts, and these things happen. They happen to the best of us. No matter who you are, you're going to have a bad day at the office. It's just unfortunate that your bad day just happened to coincide with that being your job audition as well. So I'm really happy that the Alouettes have sort of, I don't want to say forgave his mistakes, but at the same time, I guess maybe perhaps they realize that, you know what, this kid's way too talented. We've got something here in this guy. We've invested enough in him. Let's truly give him a chance some way, somehow. And best way to do it, he's going to get on the practice roster, and he'll get his reps. They'll find a way to make him work, and quite frankly, I'm pretty happy that he's there. I definitely am very high on his upside, and I definitely think they'll find a way to incorporate him into this offense or on special teams one way or another.
So, Cliffy, if you were to look at the team itself going forward to 2016, if you wanted to compare them to 2015, I mean, what type of grades would you be giving each of the positions in an overall rank? I mean, is this a team that's gotten better over the offseason? Have we regressed in any way? Is it basically a status quo for the Montreal Alouettes?
Overall, I'd say it's a status quo, to be honest with you. And I'm not saying that to be disparaging or any ways, but I mean, there's a lot of – now there seems to be a couple of chinks in the armor. I mean, again, it's more of the fact that, like I said, boundary corner, I'm concerned. Losing guys like Ellis and White are – they're huge. And replacing them with rookies too. I mean, the only thing I could possibly see happening is – if we find a way to sort of mix a couple of the other young veterans in there, like Chris Ackey, for example, he's a natural defensive back. You could easily put him in the halfback position, even though they've been trying him out as a linebacker this year. You could swap him in there. Darrell Townsend. He's more of a natural safety, but maybe he can play corner as well, or find a way to sort of use those two mixed in with the rookie secondary that they have now. If there's some sort of way that's just if only to provide a little bit of relief and at least a little bit of experience, because you've got now Billy Parker and Jovan Johnson, who are very much veterans and can definitely be great mentors for these young guys, but you've got them playing out in the field together. And again, this could be great, but now the opposing quarterbacks know to avoid that particular part of the football field.
Right,
and like,
yeah,
I said, they're going to be testing the rookies out. So in which case, my personal suggestion would be get guys like Aki and Townsend out in the boundary just to sort of balance things out a little bit, at least so it's not complete raw rookies in that particular corner of the football field. Mm-hmm. The offensive line, I know, is going to be okay for the most part. You've got some rookies there as well. Jacob Ruby, I'm very high on as well. Like I said, he didn't have the greatest preseason game against Winnipeg, but he seemed to settle down a little bit in this past Friday. So maybe it was just opening day jitters or something like that. So I'm hoping that's all it really was, because he's replacing Josh Burke, and that you're not going to do that very easily. So I'm really hoping the best for him. Christian Matt, as long as he's playing center, I think we'll be okay. If he gets hurt, then I'm going to start worrying. I mean, for the most part, I think the offensive line is not nearly as bad as what people are making it out to be. Like I said, it's not going to be perfect. You're going to get some growing pains, but overall, I'd like to see them a little bit better, but they're not nearly as bad as what people might take a look at initially and think, okay, this is going to be a weakness. Is the quarterback going to be prepared? And I'd say for the most part, especially, again, with a veteran like Kevin Glenn, I think things will be okay. Not great, but not awful either. I think we're going to be just fine in those areas there.
Right.
The defensive line, my word, that's going to be great. I'm so excited to see guys like John Bowman, Alan Michael Cash, Vaughn Martin is going to kill a guy, and I am so excited. This guy is on another level. Did you see this play? He nearly took the quarterback's head off this past Friday. It was fantastic. He even ripped his own helmet off. He was so excited. This is a guy that's going to really turn a lot of heads. And like I said, there's just the D-line itself, I'll go out and I'll say it, one of the best in this league, if not the best, just with the amount of talent that you'll see on there. And then you got the linebackers as well that are going to provide a lot of heat. And yeah, overall, on defense, I think we'll be okay. Like I said, the big question mark is going to be the boundary corner. But like I said, if this coaching staff is high on these guys, these young rookies, I'll give them every benefit of doubt, and just prove me wrong, folks. That's all I got to say.
Yeah.
If these guys are as good as what the coaching staff makes it out to be, I'll gladly eat the crow.
Just quickly for me, I think we have, I think we're doing better at quarterback. Just overall with Kevin Glenn as the de facto starter, some great guys behind him. We're stacked at wide receiver, as usual. It seems to be. I'm just hoping that the quarterback and the wide receivers are able to get together and be able to form some kind of partnership where they can get into a rhythm. As I said, that's for me briefly. I mean, the defense, if it can be on par with what it was last year, I'll be happy. To me, it's just they just need to score points. But I think overall, I think the team is up slightly from 2015. But you know, we'll have to see. I mean, everything can look okay on paper, and then it can just go totally into the crapper. But it's anything and everything can happen.
Owlet's Flight Deck presents Just the Stats with CFL statistician Steve Daniel.
Welcome back, sir.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate being on your show all the time.
How was your end of the preseason? Yeah, I guess in a nutshell.
It was a learning experience. We have an entirely new framework for collecting stats, and it's just a whole lot more comprehensive. And so when you have more comprehensive data coming out the back, your processes to collect it have to be more comprehensive to make sure you get good data.
For sure. First thing, obviously, we had the season opener this weekend. Who usually has the advantage the most? I mean, we have so many years in the CFL, so many different home, season openers for all the teams that we've had in league history. Who actually has the advantage, Steve, the home or the away team?
In home openers, season openers, the home team usually wins more often than the away team. I've kind of studied that over the course of time. Actually, one of my colleagues at the CFL office asked me a specific question. He says, how frequently do home teams win? Mm-hmm. And of course, I've studied something like 5,000 games worth of data, and they win about 58% of the time. The away is 40, and the season opener matches that pretty well. It's pretty consistent. So just under 60%.
Would you call that a surprise?
None whatsoever.
None whatsoever.
I think, you know, you get the upsets on opening day. You get upsets every week, but mm-hmm. you know, when you see a team that goes from, say, 3-15, like Saskatchewan was last year, and they've rebuilt their roster entirely, mm-hmm. the off season's a long one, is what I'm trying to say.
Right, right.
So their roster turnover, I was looking at it today, boy, they're going to need a roadmap there. They've changed a lot.
Now, it's funny you mentioned Saskatchewan. I can also mention my hometown, Alouettes. We're talking about teams that are finished last the previous season and then went on to win the division. I know it's happened, I think, recently, but how many times actually has it happened where a team has gone from worst to first?
I traced that, and it's not the rarest thing in the world. It's happened probably half a dozen times, but I have a perfect example for you. Let's take the Toronto Argonauts.
Okay.
They're a really good – they hold the CFL record, a very – very obscure record that's fun to look at. 1995, they were 4-14. That's not good.
No.
In 1996, they were 15-3. That is a win gain of 11 over the previous year, and that is the record.
That's
crazy.
Yeah, that is crazy.
And guess who their quarterback was in 1996 and wasn't in 1995?
Hmm.
I know you and I were talking about this before the show. And
Some short little dude.
Yeah, a Hall of Fame kind of guy.
Yeah. Had it maybe a sniff in the NFL, something like that.
And if you can get the name of the guy that he threw the Hail Mary pass to, you're really good.
Yeah, no.
Gerard Phelan.
There we go.
Anyway, Doug Flutie was pretty darn good.
Yeah.
And when you're, what was he, like 80-18 after he left the Lions as a starter? And one of those years was 96. So there's how you go from being bottom, and they won the Grey Cup the very next year.
Speaking of the Grey Cup, obviously you come into the gear, every team wants to win that next championship. You know, everybody wants to be that Edmonton Eskimos franchise, but there can be a Grey Cup hangover. Steve, when was the last time we actually had a Grey Cup champ miss the playoffs the year after winning the title?
Whoa, you're testing me now. You know what? I'd have to look at the data a little more closely.
Okay.
Keep focusing on Toronto, for example.
Okay.
They won their Grey Cup in 2012. 2013, they made the playoffs. Their record was a bit better. They haven't made the playoffs until last year. So, last year, they didn't win the first round, mm-hmm. so they dropped out. I think the Lions did that too. You're asking for a lot of data here, Tim. So, as you can tell, here's a good one. Let's use this as an example.
All right.
The BC Lions, they started their CFL franchise as they were really poor. Then they got really good in 63 and 64, won the Grey Cup in 64, missed the playoffs the next year, and they never won the Grey Cup for 20 years.
There we go. There's a good
there's idea. There's your prototype.
Yep.
Or they never made the playoffs for, 4 years in a row after a Grey Cup win. I believe that's the only time that's happened where you don't even make the playoffs.
Considering it's only 9 teams. Yeah.
Yes. Let's look at Montreal. Let's use them as an example of that kind of thing. In the 50s, of course, they were good. And then in the 70s, they were very good. And then they went into pretty much total eclipse.
Mm-hmm. Under two different names, too.
Yes. Well, you had Concord, and then they even started the 87 season.
That's
by
right.
Yeah. They made a media guide. They were all set. And then in April of 87, they weren't all set. But, on that note, let's mention something that I think for your fans is really important.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the Alouettes playoff streak ending last year.
Yes.
Not on a negative note, but to say that's an incredible accomplishment to make the playoffs 19 years in a row. That's to make the Grey Cup 8 times in mm-hmm. 11 years. That shows you how good Anthony Calvillo and Ben Cahoon were.
That's right.
So here's Montreal's chance to rebound from 6-12 to something better. And I believe your team has improved their roster tremendously.
I think so, too. You know, when we talk about, it's all about a quarterback to wide receiver. quarterback to handing off to the running back. But if we were to center specifically on the wide receivers, yes, and the quarterbacks, you know, it's everybody thinks it's just as simple as having a pitch and catch to the, you know, to the wide receiver. There's actually a little bit more to that, isn't there?
Absolutely. It's there's a book that was written in the 90s by a fine ex-Canadian quarterback named Frank Costantino, and he named it The Passing Game, and that's what the CFL is. And the sort of West Coast offense, the short passing game instead of the run, is really important. And we want to really mirror that in the CFL. So we've got a statistic that we introduced last year called the target, in which we can gauge by changing the rule book to say, all right, this is how many times that player is legitimately being thrown to. Mm-hmm. Now, you've, of course, seen quarterbacks who just try to get the ball across the line of scrimmage and throw it away. We don't count that. So that player, it's measurable as to how often you're throwing to a guy like Darrell Walker or Adarius Bowman in Edmonton. And it's just amazing how often they're the target.
Right. It can be a very interesting stat, needless to say.
It is. And the stat that's coming out of it that's really important for our coaches is when you're scouting, our stats are not just used for that night to see how you did. Mm-hmm. They're used enormously by next opponents. That is, if anything, a higher use for it. And they're screaming at me if they don't have it that night so they can start prepping for the next game. And so it's not just a nice to have, it's a have to have. And the target is one of those things that emerged. Last week, Edmonton threw to Bowman 12 times. So let's focus on that. And it's become quite a game to try to get them the information as soon as I can get it to them.
I wish you and all of your stats crews all the best and good luck.
We are prepared for anything, but we're prepared to mirror what's on the field.
Fantastic.
That's our job.
We'll speak to you next week, Steve.
Thanks. Thanks a lot, Tim. I really appreciate it.
Now, before we get to the to our predictions and to the previews for this week's game, Cliff, I know you wanted to, because we left it up before in the last segment, but there's some specifics that I know you wanted to talk about when it came to the practice roster, because there actually is quite a bit of talent there, but you wanted to point out a few guys in particular.
Absolutely. One name that I'm very surprised to see on there, not because he was bad, because if you're on the practice roster, it doesn't mean you're a bad player. It just means that there's no particular spot for you right now. But Chandler Jones, he was on the practice roster last year. I thought, based on the strength of his camp this year, I really thought he had done enough to actually win a spot on the full-time roster. But like I said, I guess because we're so stacked at receiver, there really is only so many places to go. So once again, he's back on the practice roster, but this is a name that I'm telling you folks right now that do not sleep on this guy. If, God forbid, someone gets hurt, slot this guy right in, and he's going to make some magic happen. I can just about guarantee that.
And everybody too. I mean, just look what we're talking about in the previous segments, is that practice roster, again, like Cliffy said, the practice roster, if you're pulled off, some of these teams are pulling these guys off of practice rosters immediately, and then they haven't gone to the first game of the season yet. Mm-hmm. Again, they can... Yes, there are rules when you pull somebody off of a practice roster. I get it. But to be able to say, I want this guy. They also have done it too. All the teams in the CFL have done this. But anyways, I digress. Continue, Cliff.
Absolutely. No, you're absolutely right. It's that's just the way the game is played, so to speak. And yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if the other teams come knocking looking for some of these guys, because I truly think that if given the chance, they could really shine. One name that I'm going to really keep my eye on this year is Dominique Termanson, former UBC Thunderbird. He played in the first preseason game and actually had the lone interception of the game for the Alouettes. This is a young player that I think, if given a chance to get some honest-to-goodness reps, I think he'd really be a real force. In fact, I'm a little surprised to see him on the practice roster and not one of these other two young players like Davis and Henderson. But again, practice roster doesn't mean it's set in stone. So, I mean, could very well be that in the next week or two, you could end up seeing a player like Termanson in the lineup as well. And I think if given the chance, he could really be a real stud to keep an eye out for. And again, you talk about offense as well. You got guys like Cam McDaniel, Martez Jackson, and Corbin Lukes, who, again, all young, if given the opportunity, are going to shine. There's so much to like about these guys. Martez Jackson was the one returning kicks in the preseason and looked great. I mean, you're not going to unseat Stefan Logan so easily. No. There's no question about that. But again, one of those situations where, God forbid, someone gets hurt, you're not going to panic because you've got someone like this in your back pocket. This roster is, they're lying in wait. They're waiting for me. If somehow someone gets hurt, their number is going to get called, and it's going to be up to them to shine. And I definitely like what these kids have to offer, and I'm looking forward to seeing, hoping that they get a chance to play. I'm not hoping if they're playing, it means someone's hurt, and I'm not hoping for that. But I'm just hoping that there's some way that these guys are able to get into the lineup and really just show everybody what they're made of.
What
we're made of. That's what the CFL is all about now, isn't it?
I see what you did there. Wah, wah, wah. Well, I can swear we were just here there 2 weeks ago. Oh, wait, we were. But it's going to be a little bit different when the team heads to Winnipeg this coming week. It's basically, it is for all the marbles. Things count. It could be very interesting. I mean, these are two teams that did not really perform all that well last year. Everybody seemed to have the quarterback issues. Coming into the first game of the 2016 season, Cliff, I mean, what do you see? How do you see the Owls stacking up against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers?
Well, Winnipeg's also a team in transition. They've also made quite a few moves in the offseason, and they've brought in a fair bit of talent as well. And they too will be looking to perform. They too are wanting to stake their claim in the Western Division. And I won't say a lot of people have written them off right away, but there's still a lot of people that just automatically look at Winnipeg and think, no, they're not going to do it. And honestly, they could surprise a lot of people. Montreal might have caught a break. We haven't confirmed anything 100%. And Mike O'Shea, in typical Mike O'Shea fashion, is not going to reveal anything that he doesn't have to. But Andrew Harris actually pulled up lame at practice today, and it's a good possibility he may not even be in the lineup on Friday versus the Alouettes. So if that's the case, then Montreal may have caught a break in that sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to see a guy go down right before our first game, but I guess any edge that the Owls could use versus the Blue Bombers and get off on the right track is obviously is something that we want to, we'll take it. Basically, we'll take it. I'm trying to just double checking this stuff here real quick, and I know stuff that I had something set up prior to what I was doing, but when it comes to the Owls and opening the season itself, I mean, they're 33 is in their history. They're 33-27-1. How'd you like that, by the way, to go through at your opener and you tie a game, by the way? Actually, I think it was the very first game in league in team history. But they're 33-27-1 in their season openers, and they are 17-15-1 on the road. It bodes well, but again, like we're talking before, almost anything can happen when it comes to a game. They've started off, by the way, they have started off at Winnipeg to start off the season three times in team. This will be the third time in team history. The last time that they opened up in Winnipeg was in 2013, to start the 2013 season. But they are 2-0. Woohoo! 2-0 all time! starting off against Winnipeg in the season opener. You think it's fair to say that we're going to get a healthy dose of Kevin Glenn to SJ Green, Kevin Glenn to Daron Carter, and so on and so on this week?
Oh, no question. And also, too, I definitely expect, talking about running backs, Tyrell Sutton. They're going to be giving him the rock as many times as possible, and I definitely fully expect him to go to work and bowl people over and get some major yardage. You got such a great attack. The potential there is fantastic. And like I said, we didn't see a whole lot in the preseason as far as what Anthony Calvillo's got up his sleeve. You got to believe, though, that he's done the work. He knows what it takes to win, and you got to believe that he's got the great plays just lying in wait. And we're finally going to see something in that. We're going to finally see what Anthony Calvillo, the offensive coordinator for the Montreal Alouettes, is all about. And I'm excited.
We can say that last year, I think, in my opinion, I think that it was the running game was down in the CFL overall. Is it fair to say that Sutton can shoot for the rushing record again this year in 2016?
No question. There's no John Cornish this year. Andrew Harris is always a threat, but, like I said, he may not even play this first game, and certainly one game is not going to make a huge difference. But if Sutton gets off to a roaring start, and again, if he factors into this offense like I think he should, then I definitely think that Tyrell can definitely shatter a couple of records if need be. I would say his biggest competition in that regards would be Jerome Messam. Will definitely get a lot of touches as well. Like I said, Harris will definitely get his shots as well. But I think, honestly, like Tyrell Sutton, he could – if you didn't know of him, you know of him now. And he's only going to get better. And if he goes down to injury, well, then you got Brandon Rutley as well. And this kid's got some wheels on him as well. I mean, he could also, too, he can catch, he can run. This kid's an offensive powerhouse as well. And I think both Sutton and Rutley are definitely going to turn a lot of heads. And again, this is why I understand why a lot of people are wanting to write off the Alouettes. And I don't blame them. There's a lot of things that even as a diehard Alouettes fan like myself, I'm still trying to wrap my head around. But when I look at the talent that's on this team, offensively, it's there. On paper, this team can be an offensive juggernaut like it used to be.
Right.
It's just a matter now of Anthony Calvillo putting it all together. And at the end of the day, that's what it's going to come down to, is can the coach make this team great? The players are good. The coach is good. Are the plays good? That's what I want to know. Mm-hmm. And if it all comes together, I like our odds. I like our odds of doing extremely well this year.
Well, I know the last two times that the Alouettes ended up in Winnipeg, they basically scored 0 points in the first quarter. And I think the Alouettes need to they need to somehow try to get into the end zone to start the season off correct. And finally, this week, everybody seems to be talking about where everybody's going to end up. And I don't necessarily would call that people are basically saying that the Owls are going to suck. If they are saying that, you know, if they're disrespecting them anyways, they're just basing it off of what's happened over the past couple years. Team's a little bit different going into 2016, as we mentioned before, Cliff. I think what we want to do is where the Owls are going to end up, what their possible record will be, and who do you think will be the choices for each division winner? I guess we'll get that out of the way first. Let's start in the West. Who do you think will be the tops in that division?
Well, Edmonton's the defending Grey Cup champions, and I'd be hard-pressed to deny them anything at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've got some question marks as far as Jason Moss as head coach, but I mean, as long as you've got Mike Riley as a quarterback, guy's a winner. I mean, there's just no two ways about it. Like, he wills teams to victory, and he proved it to the Grey Cup last year. And even though preseason, as I always said, it's not always the best measuring stick as to what a team's success is going to be, he played extremely well. And again, I think Edmonton still has a lot of really great parts, and I definitely think that they will be one of the teams to beat. And if you were to put a gun to my head and make me choose a Western, the top team in the West, it would have to be Edmonton for me.
Yeah, looking at all the other teams for me in the West, really, there are a lot of question marks, even with the new head coaching staff in Saskatchewan. I mean, do they have everything that's necessary to be better than they were last year? Yeah. I think both the Owls are in that boat also. It's just, again, what you said when it comes to Edmonton, it's hard to, you know, really bet against a defending champion. BC, I think they'll be mediocre this year. So it just leaves Winnipeg and Calgary. I would not be, I think, you know, I think of all the sleepers, just not this week, I think Winnipeg will probably surprise a hell of a lot of people. I don't know if that's going to, if that's really going to equal into more wins, but I think they're going to surprise people in many ways. But yeah, for me, it would be the Edmonton Eskimos. Now, heading home, East Division, who do you think would be the top team in the East in 2016?
I'm trying to find fault with the Toronto Argonauts, and there's not a whole lot of fault there. It pains me to say, because as a Montreal kid, to give props to anything Toronto related is tough, but credit where it's due. Ricky Ray, if he's as healthy as what he says he is, and he still plays on another level. He's got a couple of good receivers as well. He's got, you know, a good offensive line in front of him, I think, and the defense as well too, is with Rich Stubler coming back to Toronto and leading that defensive core. I really think that Toronto is going to be the team to beat in the East.
Interesting. For myself, you know, you look at what happened last year with Ottawa and Hamilton, and I'm not convinced yet with Toronto. And just the reason being is the huge factor, as you mentioned before, though, it is Ricky Ray. I'm not really not convinced. I mean, if he is as good as if he was before he got hurt, yeah, it's very possible that the Argos will be lights out and will win the East. As much as it pains me to say this, I'm actually going to give a slight edge. I'm going to put Hamilton actually on the top of the East Conference, East Division, and yeah, it's I just don't know. I think that they seem to have all the parts necessary in order to win this. I know it's, all these teams have had issues this past off season, but for some reason, I don't know what the over underwood wins would be for them, but I think I'm putting the Tiger Cats on top of the East Division. Now, to the big question, where do you think the Owls are going to end up, and what do you think their record will be this season?
I'm thinking, quite frankly, they're going to end up in third place. I can't tell you who's going to be in fourth, because, like I said, there's still a lot of questions with Ottawa and Hamilton. Like, they're both really talented teams. There's no question about that. And I definitely think it's going to be extremely tight. Like, I definitely think the Eastern Division is going to be – it's going to be Toronto, and then the other three teams are just going to be in a complete dogfight throughout the entire season. That's truly how I look at it. And I just think Montreal will just do just enough to squeak into the playoffs, and that's when you're going to see a few surprises as well.
Well, the way that it was last year when it came to the Owls, you know, they had so many chances to clinch the first ever East crossover. It's, you know, it makes me wonder how close it will be this year, you know, between the lower teams in the CFL this year. I don't think the Owls are going to have to worry about that at all. I too think that they're going to finish in third place. I think they are going to, I would not be surprised if they are just this close to being in second. I know that's saying a lot, but and I don't think it's because of wins. I know a lot of people are saying, well, Tim, you're really nuts. I really think, like you, I think this East Division may be very – I think there's going to be parity across the board when it comes to the East Division.
And one thing you got to remember too, last year, Tim, I counted at least five games where if one or two plays had gone Montreal's way, those losses would have been victories.
Yeah.
And in which case, they wouldn't have had to struggle just to make the crossover. They would have firmly been in a playoff position. And this was with an offensive coordinator who was, quite frankly, hot garbage, had no business running this offense whatsoever. Now you've got, again, still a rookie head coach, or still a rookie coach. There's no question about it. But I have to believe, just by sheer osmosis, that Anthony Calvillo is going to be a much better offensive coordinator than what Turk Schonert was for the Alouettes last year. And if that's what it comes down to, if it comes down to just a few different plays that are a little better executed, and Montreal is able to turn those close losses into close wins, that's key right there. Like, those are factors that you just can't just brush those aside. And I really think that was a big thing with Montreal last year, is just a lot of times they just couldn't stop stepping on their own toes. And I think this year there's going to be a marked difference in how Montreal approaches games and how they execute, really. Because now you've got an experienced leader like Kevin Glenn. You've got an experienced coordinator like Anthony Calvillo, who knows the Canadian game up and down. He's not an NFL retread. Like, this is a guy that's CFL through and through. So just those factors alone are going to equal to a couple extra wins here and there. So like I said, if other teams, other experts want to sleep on the Alouettes, go right ahead. I'm going to be sitting there laughing. Like, again, I'm not casting any aspersions on anything. I'm very convinced that it will be at least third place that Montreal will be in, and that's fine. Like, I definitely think, given all the turmoil that we've gone through over the past two or three seasons, I think that's – I won't say that's a reasonable goal, because at the end of the day, a reasonable goal is trying to win the Grey Cup. But at the same time, when you consider everything that this team has gone through over the past couple of seasons – if Montreal can hang in there in a very tough Eastern Division and end up in third place just to qualify for the playoffs where anything can happen, I really like those odds.
Yeah, their first five losses of the 2015 season were by 3 points or less, which is a team record for that amount of many losses in a single year. I agree. I mean, it's any of those games, if you turn those games around, they could easily have been in the crossover spot. It's just, for me, I think it's going to be quite a different year. It's something that tells me the East is going to be parity. Yeah, all these teams may be separated by one or two games. That's it. Just something tells me that that's going to be the case. If you were to give an over under, or if you were to say, well, how many wins will the Alouettes will get? Well, how many wins will the Alouettes get this season? Do you think?
I'd say if you're being in third place, I would say 8 or 9 easily. Mm-hmm. I say it won't be pretty, because like you said, there is an unbelievable amount of parity in the Eastern Division. And I said, we've seen division winners go 8 and 10. It's not as uncommon as it sounds, but I think an 8-9 win season is definitely doable for the Alouettes. And like I said, it'd be just enough to get into the playoffs. And like I said, once you get into the playoffs, anything's possible.
Yep, I'm going with a 9-9 season for the Alouettes. Third place finish. I would obviously love to see them higher to be able to have a home playoff game. But hey, anything can happen. You know, so it will be a very interesting season, needless to say. And you know what, Cliff? We're just beginning, aren't we?
Oh my gosh, yes. And like I said, how can you not be excited? I mean, the preseason is officially a memory now. Training camp is old news now. Now we just focus on what's ahead. And it all starts on Friday. Mm-hmm. Friday Night Football.
That's right.
It's back.
That's right. Don't forget that there is obviously the kickoff game. Something new this year with the CFL. They're having a kickoff game and some concerts and et cetera on Thursday with the home opener at BMO. So don't forget, catch all the games that you can. For Alouette fans, do not forget the game will be on, obviously, on TSN, and it will be on RDS. But Cliff, enjoy the game. It should be very fun, and hopefully it'll be a good start to the 2016 season for the Montreal Alouettes. So Cliffy D, I will speak to you next week. Have a good week.
To you as well. And to all of our friends and fans out there, you can catch us on social media. You follow us on Twitter at Alouettes FL Deck. Mm-hmm. Or you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/Alouettes Flight Deck. Mm-hmm. And if you've got any questions, concerns, or just want to send us some happy words, you can hit us up on the old email, alouettespodcast@gmail.com.
And also do not forget, if you happen to miss any of the former broadcasts of Alouettes Flight Deck, there are now three ways in which you can do so. Our main home is over at Podbean, alouettesflightdeck.podbean.com, and do not forget iTunes. And just recently announced, do not forget about Google Play Music.
Yes.
So for everybody here at the Alouettes Flight Deck, for Cliffy D, I'm Tim Capper. We're on Final Approach.